Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change. Glad you're sticking with us. We've got in-studio guests to start us out. Pam Hale from Through a Different Lens, based here in Tucson. How are you this morning, Pam?
Just so honored to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think our listeners, as always, I never know when I line all these segments up, but there's been some really common threads, I think, that are going to pop up further in our conversation here this morning. Let me introduce Pam. She's founder of Through a Different Lens, which is a practice dedicated to creating powerful, practical tools and experiences that bring vision, creativity, and wisdom into focus to help people thrive. And that means physically, professionally, as well as spiritually. Educated at Stanford and Columbia Universities, Pamela has created a unique body of work that's woven together from her varied experiences as a teacher, life coach, spiritual director, photographer, fundraiser, consultant to nonprofits, and also a shamanic practitioner. Creator of the Sand Spirit Insight Cards, workbook, and certification trainings, Pam is a pioneer in the therapeutic photography movement. Very interesting. She got her pilot's license in her late 50s and resides here in Tucson with her husband, John. Our focus today actually is going to be her new beautiful multi-layered memoir, which is called Flying Lessons, How to Be the Pilot of Your Own Life. Pam uses the story of her pursuit of a pilot's license as a metaphor for life to really help anyone in the air or on the ground to break free of gravity and realize one's potential to soar. The aerial photography and pieces that are interspersed with the text add some richness to the reading experience and also can really demonstrate Pam's gift as both a writer and an artist. So again, congratulations on your new piece.
Thank you so much.
So how's it been going so far? You never know. I know you're also a grandmother of many grandchildren, so this idea of birthing is not uncommon, but the idea you now have your body of work out there, what's it feel like?
Well, it's lovely. And I hear that bio, I realize how old I am.
Oh, no. We keep that part a secret. But, you know, I have to suspect, though, when you made the decision to start pilot's license into your 50s, you know, whether that be a voice inside your head or voices outside your head saying, what, are you crazy? I mean, was that part of that stepping forward, too?
Absolutely. One of the outside voices that was rather hilarious was when I went to get my medical, which is a prerequisite for soloing, and the doctor that I saw who gives flight medicals was looking at my file, and his back was to me, and I just saw his head shaking no, just shaking no, and I finally said, is there a problem? And he turned around and he said, it's just that you're starting all this now?
Right.
And I thought, this is not a good omen.
Other than I have a hunch, Pam, that there's enough in your background that there was a voice that also rose inside of you, and that was, well, I'm going to show him.
Absolutely. I've always had that one.
That's
yes.
Right. Well, the fact that you, of course, then have enjoyed this experience of being a pilot, you've done the other work, as I mentioned, the body of knowledge around helping others, whether that be shamanic studying or perhaps more traditional coaching approaches and the like, to have it all kind of come together in a book. Did that surprise you? Was it something that came out of a definite plan or out of nowhere?
Well, we've heard other people on the show today talking about whether it's a plan, and we do the plan and then we edit the plan.
Right, right.
So actually, I have been writing all my adult life, and so, of course, I was journaling while taking flying lessons, and I was also writing about research I was doing on my biological father, who was a World War II pilot who was shot down and killed when I was a baby. So clearly flying has been a metaphor that's followed me all through my life. And then, of course, my husband is a pilot and has been a pilot all his adult life. So I'm sure psychotherapists could have a blast with me, and they have.
Because that's what I was going to say. I have a hunch you picked up that husband of yours based on this thought of, this might be one to invest in. You never know.
I admit that was part of the attraction.
I love it. No, that's right. But, you know, I think you start off your piece, and incidentally, for our listeners, again, the book is Flying Lessons, an inspirational manual for leading, living, and loving, and how to be the pilot of your own life. You start out right out of the chute saying, don't you realize, and didn't you feel as a child, always this desire to fly? I mean, how many of us, hopefully in a safer condition, would try to jump off the roof in the barn into the hay? You know, or I know for me, I always had dreams of being pursued by the bad guys and being able to just, you know, do the Superman 1-2-3 jump, and I was flying away.
Uh-huh. And have you had those flying dreams as adults?
Of course.
Yes.
It's a reoccurring pattern. Yes.
So, and when I
see... The bad guys just changed. And now they're the corporate guys who has been agonizing me. Or, yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, when I speak, I love to ask audiences, how many of you have had a dream of flying under your own power?
Your own power.
It's always at least half. So I know that even people who don't particularly like to board an airliner still can get with this very deep, very universal metaphor of flight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the journey that you've taken, because that's the other piece about your book, this is not your standard fare leadership development book or self-help book, because it's actually a memoir. And you also are very open to sharing your life experiences, your fears, your foibles, your successes. That's a different kind of book to write, really.
It is. I went through a lot of decision-making, working with an agent and an editor about that mix and whether to do a hybrid, whether it should be a memoir, whether it should be self-help, and I really wanted to do this hybrid version. And so I really am pleased that I did that. I think it works.
Well, the other piece of it is every single chapter, and indeed in Pamela's book, we have the 7 flying lessons for your life. And throughout the story, you're also going to become familiar with her flight instructor, Cleo.
Yes.
Correct. And even to say, you know, we have a debrief, you know, post-flight debrief, so the reflection segment, it lends itself very, very well to a guiding path workbook process.
Well,
too.
It does. And I actually almost subtitled it A Journey Beyond Fear, mm-hmm. rather than How to Be the Pilot of Your Own Life. I decided the positive version was better.
Yes, the F word is right up there
the
with the
word
the
is
control
a difficult
word. Yeah.
One, but there is a lot about fear in here and self-doubt. And that's what under pressure, you know, under, I think, any situation of pressure, whether it be in your work life or your home life or just living on the planet right now in these challenging times, we all have pressures on us.
That's right.
And they can bring up fears and self-doubts. And so we need to figure out how to pilot our way through that turbulence.
Well, and I love, again, you can pun and metaphor constantly here. It's beautiful. The other beautiful piece of this book, of course, is that it is also a photo journal. So we're looking throughout at incredible aerial photographs that you've taken over your life.
Mm.
So in some regard, it's a book that I'm sure people are going to pick up and say, is this a memoir? Is it a self-help? Is it a photography book? Is it a coffee table thing? And so why not hit on more than one cylinder, right?
It's true. I like to say to people, you're really getting a coffee table book for the price of a paperback.
Oh, and that there's an attractive factor. These photographs that are throughout, of course, obviously, yes, Arizonans will spot many that are over the Grand Canyon, but also other bodies of water and the like. The type of cameras that you've used over the years, or your own adventures to black and white versus color and so on. Tell us a bit about that journey.
Well, in one of my former lives, during this biological life, I was a professional photographer. I taught photography. I had a studio, educational photography studio in Southern California. And so I've sort of experimented with them all.
Mm-hmm.
But I happily jumped into digital photography. And, you know, I use a Canon Rebel to take my aerial photographs. I'm not into anything really exotic. I'm just documenting what is below me, the view of the beauty of the earth below me.
Well, any of you who are photographers, and interestingly and coincidentally enough, we have a photographer coming in the segment after you, by the way, it isn't about the technology. It's about how you manage what's in the rectangle, right? It's your
That's
understanding
right.
of light, color, or, as you say, if you're documenting your own journey, this is what's coming of it.
Yes, and in life, it's about managing what is inside the rectangle.
Beautifully.
Through a Different Lens title I give my business is really about the fact that photography has been an instrument, a vehicle for me for learning how to see. And that's what I try and help other people do. I think indigenous people, shamans from all over the planet, say that right now what we need is a change in perception. We need to dream a new dream. And so that's what it's all about. If we're going to dream a new dream, whether it's in our relationship or our job or our life or changing the planet, whatever it is, we need to be able to use our facility that is a uniquely human facility to switch lenses, to reframe, to look at things anew. And that's the way we rise above the gravity of mm-hmm. things that pull us down when we get stuck using the same way of framing things.
That's right. In fact, those four words, tell us about the four engineering words related to flight that you anchor so nicely. Of course, this appeals to me. For those of you who know me, my background is having spent time in automotive and aerospace engineering and working on jet engines and airplanes. So, of course, that was another reason your book brought my attention. But the four words.
Oh, are you talking about the four forces of flight?
The four forces of flight.
Yes. Well, this book, in a way, it is about managing these four forces of flight, these four kinds of energies that we run into in ourselves and in our lives. So to fly an airplane, whether it's a paper airplane or a big jet, we need to manage lift, which is the one that you would think of as being fundamental, but the countervailing force to that is gravity. We can't just have all lift. So even though we love lift and we think we want to be high and we want to be in bliss and we want to raise our level, we also need to be grounded and we need to be able to come back to terra firma. And then there's thrust and drag. And of course, thrust gets us forward fast. And so in this culture, we want thrust. It's all about more thrust.
Moving and fast and
yes.
speed. Right.
And we need drag, which is the braking action that controls us so that we aren't just dancing out of control like the girl in the myth of the red shoes who starts dancing and can't stop.
Right. In fact, I have that metaphor of flight. We have big, huge glass double doors, windows in front of our house, and invariably the hawks are so skilled at getting the doves to frantically fly, and they fly right into the glass, smack.
Oh.
But the hawks, they've already applied drag with their wings and screech themselves to this in-air stop so that they then just float to the ground, pick them up, and fly off with lunch. But that idea of understanding how to bring drag, in fact, being an automotive engineer,
yes.
that as much energy as we put into engineering how fast we can get the vehicles to go from 0 to 60, the more profound one is how fast you can get it from go from 60 to 0 and not have an accident or incident.
Interesting. And watching birds is a good way to learn about that.
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
You wanted to, I think, do a reading from your book. Why don't we do that right now so our listeners get a sense of your style, metaphors, and also even your selecting the one you will tell us a lot about where you're headed.
Well, I think because we talked about Clio and because you talk a lot about leadership, in a way this book is about how we find the flight instructor within us.
Right.
Because we all have a part of us that's the scared, neurotic student. At least I'll use neurotic in my own case. And then we have the wise, experienced flight instructor who really knows all about where to go next. And so it's about making contact with that one within and having her hopefully be the one who's usually in charge. So as for meeting the real Clio, who is my flight instructor in Tucson, I'll just read a little section about what it was like to meet her. So this is a section entitled My Guide, because in the hero or heroine's journey, according to Campbell, we have a departure, we have a road of trials, an initiation and a road of trials, and then hopefully during that initiation we meet a mentor or guide.
That's right.
You're a mentor or guide.
Yeah,
and
multiple
and so
ones.
Am I. Yes,
nothing,
and so hopefully we meet her. And so meeting Clio could be akin to meeting the fairy godmother or the angelic force mm-hmm. within, or in this case a very earthy figure. So right away I could tell Clio was a big person, even though she stands about 5'2" and probably weighs 120 pounds dripping wet. Her short cropped hair was beginning to show some gray, but I could tell she'd never bothered to dye it. She wore no makeup and emitted a no-nonsense air. The scariest thing about her was that her kitchen countertops had absolutely nothing on them. To me, complete lack of clutter was the sign of a sick mind. To make matters worse, her dogs minded perfectly. Despite the fact that Clio would clearly not accept my excuses, something in me said she was the one. Maybe it was her easy, down-to-earth tone of authority. I could see she'd never lie to me. That could have its disadvantages, but just the same, I trusted her. Without a whimper, I signed up for my first flying lesson a week later. In Campbell's map of the heroine's journey, Clio could represent the goddess, or in fairy tales she would be the fairy godmother. I had no idea at that time how transformational my time with her would be, or how difficult. She would become my aviation therapist, the one who would guide me through the minefield of fears I was about to encounter.
That's wonderfully put. So even your having been fascinated by flight all those years, and as you said, exploring back to the father that you really never remembered, and marrying a pilot and so on, still that thought of really going off and get a pilot's license, it took a nudge to get you to do it.
Oh, it took a big challenge. In that heroine's journey, there's the challenge. You have the call, and I already had the call going, but then someone needs to give you an assignment. And so I had been flying with my husband John for 8 years in the right seat all the time, claiming that I was going to get my license, until one otherwise ordinary Saturday morning when he went. So I'm going out to change the oil in the plane, and I just thought I might stop by and see Cleo, the flight instructor out there. And so I was thinking you might go with me, because I'm just kind of wondering about this question, and that is that you've been talking for 8 years about getting your license, and I'm just wondering, is it talk, or were you going to do it?
Oh, boy, the old call the bluff thing.
Oh,
right?
Nailed.
Well, you've gone on and structured your book to be the 7 flying lessons of life. I'd like you to touch on a couple of these to kind of wet the whistle of our listeners. I know the first one is knowing where you're going to land. Second, bring enough fuel for the journey. The third, take the pilot seat. 4, remember why you long to fly. 5, communicate with the controllers. I like that one. 6, broaden your scan. And then 7, give way to the winds. And obviously that's that cycle. Now, pick one of those and tell me how. Tell us a little bit, what do you mean by a flying lesson and how it comes to life in your book?
Well, since you like communicate with the controllers, let's take that one. So that one, all of these flying lessons, by the way, for people who are into the metaphysical theory, these corresponds to the chakras. So lesson 5 corresponds to the 5th chakra, which is at the throat, which is about our will and also our expression, kind of managing that polarized energies.
Challenges, yeah.
And so we all have controllers. Of course, in aviation, they're the ones in the tower who are up there to keep planes separate from each other and keep us safe in the skies. But when you're a student, they are the big gods in the sky, and you are just sure they're out there to nail you. And it's very hard to remember that they put their pants on one time, and they're just people up there in the tower. Well, we also have inner controllers in our lives. We all have outer controllers as well. We have bosses, we have policemen, we have authority figures, we have our parents, we have various people who, for one way or another, are giving us feedback that means a lot to us. And so when we get negative feedback, we're often triggered by those controllers. And then, of course, the biggest task is to communicate with the inner controllers, those inner voices, the ones that you hear as my whiny, neurotic, fearful voice in the book, where Cleo is the voice of reason and logic. My inner controllers are acting up big time.
Which can serve you well in many instances, but they all can get in your way.
Yes, so it's a matter of discernment. This is really a chapter and lesson about discernment. Which voices are true? In which case am I listening to a voice that is really pointing out something that shows me I need to make a course correction here? And it may be hard on my ego, but that's the way it is. I need to turn left. And which ones are really ones that we need to realize are not authentic, and that we need to bring our voice forward? So for those people who are yoga people, this is a whole system. And so each lesson corresponds, not only has a challenge, it has a gift. And so the gift of this lesson is finding your own true voice. And then there's also a chakra and an archetype and a color and a yoga pose. So for those yoga people who are listening, the yoga pose would be cat-cow. And if you picture you're kneeling on all fours and you arch your back and bow your head, so that would be the part where you're submitting. And then you raise and straighten your spine and stretch your head out, and that is where you're really opening to your own true voice.
Mm-hmm. So, again, for our listeners, we're speaking, by the way, again to Pam Hale from Through a Different Lens is her organization, and her new book is Flying Lessons, How to Be the Pilot of Your Own Life. Just the mere fact, Pam, that you have pulled upon knowledge from the flight experience, your coaching and consulting work, your background in photography, your pursuit, and then also the shamanic yoga experiences. This is really a one-stop shop for a lot of integrative self-help work, as well as very visual joy of the photography that you've taken. You wanted to read perhaps another segment in the book. Let's grab a second. We've got some time.
I think I will read one to, and this ties in with some of what your other guests talked about this morning too. I think, how do we remember what we actually know? Because we're always editing and things are always going wrong and our course is always changing. And so this is about you know more than you think you do. At one point in my training, Cleo observed that I was relying too much on the instruments and not trusting my own assessments based on staying outside the plane. That meaning keeping my eyes outside the plane. The next time we got into Yellowbird, she got out a stack of yellow paper discs and began taping them over the gauges.
Oh, yeah.
Is this April Fool's Day, I wanted to know? She smiled. Well, maybe in a way. I want to show you that you're no fool. You know more than you think you do. Now let's go flying. I'm sure my eyes were wide as I taxied for takeoff and couldn't look at the speed indicator to check on whether we'd reach takeoff speed. I'm sure I didn't dare blink when I had to guess when we had reached the right altitude for leveling off and turning out away from the traffic pattern. When she had me do turns, I couldn't check to see if the little diagram of the wings was level with the horizon line. I had to look at the real ones. The biggest surprise came when she had me land. I couldn't check to see that I had cut the power back to exactly 1,500 RPM at the point where I had been trained to do that. I couldn't see whether I was exactly at pattern altitude. I had to judge for myself. I was reminded of early pilots who didn't have any of those gauges, but who flew by feel and by judgment. I could fly by the seat of my pants better than I thought, and so I'll bet can you.
And that is absolutely true, but it came with, obviously, the journey of experience. But the fact that flying is a complete body experience, it isn't just a visual one, it's the feel, the touch, the vibration in the seat, I would imagine.
Yes, yes. It's all, though, I think it's sort of a four-dimensional experience, maybe, because it does involve left brain, right brain, the physical, as you say, and in my case, certainly the emotional.
Which again speaks so strongly to why the attraction of flight and partnering with your focus on photography as well as the business that you run. How wonderful. Well, Pam, thank you so much for joining us. For listeners, again, you can learn more about her work at Through a Different Lens, and that's lens.com. And also her book is available. How could people get a copy of your book?
Well, if you'd like a signed copy, please go to my website, and I'll sign one for you and send it to you. And then it's also available at many local stores, Antigone and Barnes & Noble here in Tucson, and also on Amazon.
On Amazon.com. Very good. Well, Pam, thank you again. Pam, take flight. We're looking forward to tracking you.
Let's soar. Thank you, Zara.
You're making our pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.